We're holding on Yud Zayin Amud Beis, the third to last of the narrowest lines. The line begins with Ma'ro'u, and that's where we're holding. We're in the middle of talking about the order of the brachas of Shemana Esra. We said that there are a number of things, the Megillah, good morning, Yaakov. We said the Megillah, Krishma, and Tefillah, meaning Shemana Esra, that have to be said in order. So we're working out then what exactly is the order of Shemana Esrei and why? What's so significant about the order? So we said there are various psukim that represent that that reflect the idea of what the order of the brachas should be. So far we got up to and including the bracha of Slach Lanu. So now Umaro Loim Geula Bashvius. What did the Chachamim see in psukim that says that the bracha of Geula should be number seven, the bracha of Re'en Avonenu? So Rava says, because the Geula HaMitzvah Shlema is going to be in the seventh year, therefore, in token of that, the Chachamim set up that the bracha having to do with Geula is the seventh. Now, strictly speaking, I mean, the bracha of Geula, that we said, the bracha Geul Yisrael, the bracha Re'en Avonenu, that we say in Shemana Esrei, is not primarily talking about the Geula from the Geula, it's not talking about the Geula, the national Geula of the Jewish people. That you have later brachas that deal with the various aspects of that. Right now, we're talking mostly about in that bracha, we're asking Hashem to save us and then redeem us from various individual troubles that come at different times. Still, though, it's got a name of Geula on it. So how is that associated with the seventh? So the Gemara says, one second, Bahamamar, don't we say in Sanhedrin, the Gemara has a discussion, there's a long sugya over there about Yemos HaMashiach. We're actually going to be getting to it in the next few days in the Ein Yaakov Shir, Bez Hashem, sometime during the coming week or the week after that. Anyway, the Gemara brings a detail over there, details of how it's going to unfold. And it says, so it describes what's going to happen during the first 5 years. Then it says, Bashishis Kolos. In the sixth year, there are going to be sounds, which can mean sounds of like rumors that Mashiach is coming. It can also mean, Rashi says over there, it means the sound of shofars that are blowing to announce Mashiach. But Shvius Milchamos, in the seventh year of that cycle, there's going to be wars. Vapashus meaning the war of Gog and Magog. Vamotzoi Shvius Ben David Ba, and at the end of that year of Shmita, or the beginning of the year after that, Mashiach is going to come. So you see that Mashiach is coming in the eighth year or right after the seventh year. What do we mean that Geula is in the seventh? The answer is Melchama Nami Aschalta de Geulahi. The answer is that war that we're talking about is itself the beginning of the Geula, and therefore that justifies saying that that Geula is associated with the seventh, and therefore the Chachamim set up the bracha of Geul Yisrael as the seventh bracha of Shemana Esrei. Now, of course, what does that mean? I mean, you know, it doesn't mean Mashiach Achakala B'chol Yom Shiyava. It doesn't mean that necessarily we have to have all these things happen before it. The Gemara there talks about, in particular, you have those Be'ita and those Achishena, those Mashiach can come on at a certain defined schedule, and then Mashiach can also come at any moment, Achishena, if we're Zoicha. So this schedule the Gemara is talking about is in the Be'ita mode, if Mashiach is going to be coming on the predetermined schedule that Hashem knows when that's going to be, then you're going to have all these things preceding it. Anyway, okay. Next, Umaro Loimer Rafur Bashminis. What did the Chachamim see in Psukim that makes them say that the bracha of Rafur should be number eight? Now, of course, the question is, Marashal says, what do you mean? Once we already had all the previous slots filled, then there's no choice for it to be the eight. And he says, okay, because the fact is, we did say before that in principle, Rafur does follow Slicha. We said we brought a posik Haseleach B'chol Avenechi HaRoifa L'chol Tach L'roichi. And we said that, okay, to a certain extent, the refuah that we're talking of in those psukim is the refuah of tshuva, so therefore it's part of slach lanu, but still, the Gemara is bothered by why it seems a little bit of a weak reason to say, because we just said, because Mashiach is associated with the seventh, therefore they put Re'enu Vanyenu in, so the question is there an independent reason why Refa'enu Davka had to be the eighth bracha that justifies doing that, even though that goes against the simple meaning of the psukim that we said before. And the Turei Evan similarly explains that we just said that after all, Mashiach is primarily coming from Motzoi Shvius in the eighth year. It's only we're saying the Mochama is the beginning of Geula. So the question is, why did the Chachamim have to Davka do it that way and Davka make Refa'enu the eighth bracha? So the answer is Amar Rabbah, Mitoch Shenitna Mila Bashminis, Shetzircha Refua, because since Mila takes place on the eighth day, and Mila requires Refua, Lefichach Kavu'or Bashminis, therefore the Chachamim set up that the Bracha Refa'enu is the eighth Bracha in token of that. Okay. Next, so my role on Birkas Hashanim Bakshiyas, what brought the Chachamim to say that the next one, Birkas Hashanim, Baruch Aleinu, should be the ninth bracha? So Rabbi Alexandri says the reason is because in that bracha, we're asking Hashem for a year of plenty. There should be plenty for rainfall and plenty for crops and so forth. And that is, we're also asking Hashem, therefore, to break the power of the mafkiyei sha'arim, the people who hoard food and cause shortages. What happens is, in a time of famine, you have people hoard food for themselves. They hoard grain or other foods or whatever in their granaries, and therefore that drives up the prices because there's less supply and therefore that causes inflation, and that hurts the poor people the worst. So therefore we daven to Hashem that He should provide plenty of rain and plenty of crops, and that way the mafkiyei sha'arim won't be able to do their thing. Now you have a pasuk in Tehillim where David HaMelech davens shver zroi on Rasha, break the arm of the Rasha. Now which Rasha? Which kind of Rishoyim are we talking about? So Rashi explains earlier in that capital, it speaks of Rishoyim who lie in wait to rob the poor. Now, so we're obviously not talking about regular plain old highway robbers or whatever, because why would they rob the poor? They would be robbing the rich. They're the ones who have the money. So this refers to, so therefore we understand that it's referring to these mafkiyei sha'arim, where what they do with hoarding grain and driving up the prices, that mainly hurts the poor people. So this pasuk also represents that. The David ki amra b'tshias amra. When David said that pasuk, he said it in the ninth capital of Tehillim. Now we actually have it as the tenth capital of Tehillim. This is part of capital Yud. Now Rashi, actually, the Gusa we have in front of us in Rashi says that you're going to say that it's the eighth one, but Marsha says, and Tosfos also says that really it's supposed to be that what the Gemara meant was it's the tenth one, because you look in our Tehillim, it's actually the tenth one, and the answer is that the first two Kapitlach of Tehillim, Ashrei HaIsh, and Loma Rog Shugoyim used to be one long kapitel, so therefore all the numbers of the kapitel after that are shifted down one. So therefore, what's now the 10th kapitel used to be the 9th kapitel. So therefore, in token of that, they put this bracha as the 9th bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. Next, Umar Ro Loimus Kibbutz Golias La'acha Birkas Hashanim. Why is the next thing after that the bracha of Tkav HaShofar, where we ask Hashem to gather in our exiles? So dichtiv, because you have a pasuk that associates those two. Va'atem hora Yisrael, Yechezkel says, you mountains of Yisrael, anpechem titenu, you're going to give forth your branches, uperyechem tisu la'ami Yisrael, and you'll produce your fruit for my people Yisrael, ki kerev olavoy, because they're near to coming. In other words, when the geula, when kibbutz golias is on its way, then you're going to see before that Eretz Yisrael becomes very fertile and flourishing again. In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that sugya about Mashiach, says that one of the clearest signs you can see that Mashiach is coming is when Eretz Yisrael is flourishing. It is flourishing and like it describes in this passage. So the next thing after the land flourishing, which we ask for in Birkas Hashanim, the next thing after that is kibbutz golias. Next, v'chiven sh'niskab to Golias, once the Golias are gathered together, the next stage is nasa din b'rishoyim, then the Rishoyim get their judgment and their punishment. Sh'nema v'ashiva yodi alayich, as the Pasuk says, I will put my hand back against you, v'etzrif kabur sigoyich, I'll refine out your dregs, your dross, like the metaphor is like you have metal mixed with various other precious metal mixed with various kinds of base metal, and you have to refine it out, kabur, as if with soap. And the pasuk continues, v'ashiva sheftayach kvar yishayna, and I'll restore your judges like they were before. So we see, before they even settle in Yerushalayim, then already you have that all the b'diloyich, all of the people who don't belong there, get removed, and then v'ashiva sheftayach kvar yishayna. In fact, Rashi continues, the pasuk continues, Tzion Mishpati Pada, Vishavah Bitzdaka. So therefore, that's why we have it in that order, that first we have Kibbutz Golias, which is represented by Vishavah Bitzdaka, and then we have the establishment of the judges again, which is the Bracha HaShiva Sheftein. Next, the Kibbin Shanasa Din Min HaRishayim, once that judgment is executed against the Rishayim, Kolo HaPoshim, then the Poshim, all the people who act deliberately against Hashem, who Rashi says these are people who don't believe in Torah Min HaShemayim, and then various other aspects of Yiddishkeit that they don't believe in, so they disappear. The Kolo Zeydim Imahim, when you say in that bracha, you also have to include with them, with the Minim, you also have to include the Zeydim, people who deliberately transgress the Torah, even if they don't necessarily believe wrong things about it, but they deliberately decide that that various things in Torah don't belong to us. Morning, Yaakov. Shenema v'sheva poshim v'chatoim yachtav yichlu, as the pasuk continues over there in Yeshaya, that there'll be a breaking of the poshim, of the people who rebel against Hashem, v'chatoim, and the ones who sin against Hashem, and the pasuk finishes off, yichlu, that they'll all disappear. So therefore, the next thing after that is Birkas Aminim. Now, of course, Birkas Aminim was only set up later. We know that originally there were 18 brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, and then they added Birkas Aminim. But in other words, there was already a hint in the pasuk that it should be played, that if they have a need to create it, then here is the place they should put it. Next, the Kivin Shekolu HaPoshim, once these Poshim are gone, Misrim Memet. So therefore, that's why, in other words, when we said that we include the Zeydim, that is why in the bracha, we have V'la Mashinim Al Tisikva, V'chol Aminim V'chol HaZeydim Kerega Yevedu. Why are we mentioning Minim and Zeydim in the same breath? Where again, Minim are the ones who deny various aspects of Yiddishkeit. They claim, for example, as the Rambam defines a Min, that there's no Hashem at all, or that there's two or more, or that he has a body, etc., etc. Why are we including Zeydim, people who deliberately transgress the Torah with them? Because that's what the Gemara is saying. You have to include them together over here. They're both, in as far as that goes, in the same category. They both are going to be destroyed. Next, the kibbutz kolu aposhim. Once the poshim are gone, misrim nemes keren tzaddikim. Then the hun, meaning the power of the tzaddikim, is exalted. Dichtiv v'cholkani rishoyim agadeya, as the pasuk says, all the power of the rishoyim are cut down. Terei mamna kaunis tzaddik, the power of the tzaddik. I'll exalt and raise up the power of the tzaddik. So therefore, that's why the bracha ala tzaddikim goes after the lamashim. The kolu geiri atzaddikim atzaddikim. In the bracha about the tzaddikim, you also have to ask Hashem to be kind to the geirim, which is what we do in the bracha. Val geiri atzedik valenu. Shenema b'pnei seva tokum v'adar to pnei zokin. As the pasuk says, you should get up in honor of an old person. You should honor the face of a zokin, which means the tamid chacham. At the samachlay, and the next pasuk continues, v'chiyogu itchem ger. If a ger lives among you in your land, then the Torah says be very careful and don't oppress him and don't treat him wrongly. So we see that the gerim go together with the tzaddik. Next, the heichan mitzri memes karnam. Where is the power and the strength of the tzaddikim going to be uplifted? The Yerushalayim, mainly in Yerushalayim. Shenema shalu shloim Yerushalayim, as the pasuk says, look for the welfare of Yerushalayim. Yishloyu oyavayich, those who love you should be at peace. So therefore, that's why after the bracha ala tzaddikim, that's why the next bracha is the one about Yerushalayim. The kibin shenivnes Yerushalayim ba David. When Yerushalayim is rebuilt, then David comes. Shenema, as the pasuk says, achar, afterward, meaning after they return to Yerushalayim and to the Beis Hamikdash, Yeshuvu bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people will do tshuva, uvikshu et Hashem alekehem, they'll seek out Hashem their God, the es David Malcolm, and their King David. So therefore, that's why after the Yerushalayim goes a semach. Now, you have, there's an interesting discussion about what's the order of these things. Don't we usually say, I mean, the Rambam, for example, writes that Mashiach is Bona Mikdash B'mekomoy, or Mekabit Nincha Yisrael, that he does all that, he builds the Beis Hamikdash, he gathers the dispersed Jewish people together, and then he's Mashiach Vadai, and up until that point, he's Cheskas Mashiach, implying that by that point, he's already a king. So there is a good deal of discussion about that. One point is the Bach mentions on the tour goes through the brachas over here and brings this whole discussion of the Gemara and various other reasons why the brachas are in the order that they are. And the Bach in that connection mentions, we're not saying over here Ben David, which means Mashiach. We're talking about David himself, meaning that as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that you're going to have Mashiach is that they're going to have Mashiach as like a king and David is like the viceroy to the king. So therefore, we're saying over here, after this Mikdash is built, then David is going to come, the original David is going to come and resume his role as leader of the Jewish people alongside Mashiach. But Mashiach himself is going to be there before that because, like, as the Rambam is saying, his job is Bona Mikdash B'mkayma. There's a good deal of discussion, pro and con, about all of that, about the exact order of things. And again, to a certain extent, it depends on how Yemos Mashiach is going to unfold, whether it's going to be Be'ita or Achishena, like we said before, according to the schedule, or whenever the Jewish people are worthy of Mashiach. So there's that. There's that consideration. There's a sikh also where the Rebbe talks about the idea that the shleimus of Yerushalayim and of the Beis Mikdash is only achieved when David is there. So really, in other words, only when David, only when Mashiach shows up, only when you have Malchus based David again, only then can it really be said that Yerushalayim has really been rebuilt. So therefore, that's why we have the order of Yerushalayim and then Estzemach. Next, Kivin Shabbat David Basa Tefillah. Once David comes, then Tefillah comes, meaning now the Jewish people are really able to daven to Hashem. Shenema Vavi Osim al Haukodshi, the Pasuk says, I'll bring them to my holy mountain, the Simachim Beis Tefillasi, and I'll make them happy in the place of my Tefillah. So we see that only once they come to my holy mountain, only once Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash are fully set up and operational and have their full Kedusha, then it's really possible to daven. So therefore, that's why the next bracha is Shema Kelein. The kivin shabos tefillah bos avoda. Once the tefillah comes, then the avoda comes. Now we're able to do the avoda for Hashem, the korbanos shenema. As that same pasuk continues, early seim v'zivchayim l'rotzen al mizbechi. Their olos and their shlomim and the other korbanos will be accepted favorably on my mizbeach. So therefore, that's why the next bracha is ritzei and v'sechazena, which though that bracha asks Hashem to restore the avoda to the Beis Mikdash. And in the time of the Beis Mikdash, in fact, that was the bracha where they asked Hashem to accept the avoda that was being done. Next, the kivin shabos avoda, bos toida. Once we have avoda to Hashem, then we have together with the toida that we thank Hashem. Shenema zeveach toida yichabdonani. As the pasuk says, the one who offers a toida honors me. So we see, in other words, that there's zeveach, you bring a korban, and then toida thanks. And Marsha, in fact, points out that the word toida over here can mean the word hoida means not just thanking; it also means acknowledging, as in when you bring various korbanos that you say vidui on them. That you, for example, a person brings a chatas, he says a vidui for the aveda that he did. So therefore, so it's all connected together. That with the avoda comes hoida, comes this thanking Hashem for the things that he did and acknowledging that we did wrong towards Hashem. So therefore, that's the next one. Now, next, why did the Chachamim put Birkas Koyanim in after the bracha, after the Moedim? So the reason is, dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Aaron lifted up his hands to the people for Birkas Koyanim, and he blessed them. And then the Pasuk says, then he came down from the Mizbeach, where he had brought the chakas and the ola and the shlomim of the miluim of the inauguration of the Mishkan. So therefore, we see that there's an association between the avoda and Birkas Koyanim. So the question is, so ema kodim avoda. So maybe it means that he benched them and that we should say the bracha of Birkas Koyanim before avoda, and instead we're doing it afterwards. And the answer is lo sakadaitach. You can't think that way. It says he came down from doing the chakas and so forth. So miksiv lasos, so it doesn't say he came down in order to do them, which would imply that he had been standing on a high place, said Birkas Koyanim, then is coming now down to do the chatos and so forth. It's a may asos, it says from doing them, implying that he finished being makir with them, and then he blessed the people. Okay, the question is, v'leimer achar ha'avoda. Fine, so in that case, we should have the order should be the bracha of avoda, which is ritzei and v'sechazena. Then would come Birkas Koyanim, as we said in the pasuk that Aaron finished the avoda and then did Birkas Koyanim, and then would be Moedim where we thank Hashem. And the answer is Lo Sakadatach. You can't think that way. Dichtiv Zeveach Toda, because after all, we have the pasuk that we quoted before, Zeveach Toda, that shows that there's an association between Zeveach, between bringing a korban to Hashem, and Toda thanking Hashem. So therefore, those two have to go together. Okay, the question still is, my chos is the samchas ahai. Fine, if you have one posik that implies that zeveach and toda have to go together, and you have another one that implies that right after the avodah should be duchening, my chos is the samchas ahai. Why are you relying on the one posik, smoch ahai? Instead, rely on the other posik and say that that should be the order, avodah, then birkas koinim, then hoda. And the answer is, after all, mistabra, yeah, but it's more logical, avodah, vodah, chodah, milsim. That avodah and hodah are essentially two things. So again, Rashi explains that it means that hodah is also a form of avodah. When you thank Hashem, then you're also performing an avodah to Hashem. So therefore, it really is effectively all one thing. And Marsha points out that when you bring many korbanos, you either thank Hashem or you acknowledge that you did wrong to Hashem. So therefore, it's part of the avodah. So it's not even a question of, in other words, that we should consider, well, what should come first, Hodah or Birkas Koyanim? There's no question, Avodah and Hodah are basically two facets of the same thing. Therefore, we put them together, and only after them comes Birkas Koyanim. Okay, next. Umar ro loim asim shalom acha Birkas Koyanim. Why did the Chacham decide to put Avodah next, to put Sim Shalom next? So dichtiv, as the pasuk says, v'samu ashmi al bnei Yisrael v'ani avarchem. As it says, they will put my name on bnei Yisrael, and I will bless them. And we know bracha da'akadosh baruch hu shalom. The bracha, the primary bracha that Hashem gives is the bracha of shalom. Dichtiv shenema Hashem yivarech es ami v'shalom. So therefore, that's why sim shalom goes as the next and last bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, so that explains the order of the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. Now the question is, we said at the beginning of the sugya that we said that the 120 chachamim, including many neviim, in other words, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, set up the order of the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. Then we said that Shimon HaPkuli set them up in front of Ram Gamliel and Yavne. So why did he need to do that again? If 120 skenim, including many neviim, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, set up the order of the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, Shimon HaPkuli my hister. So what exactly did Shimon HaPkuli accomplish? And the answer is, as the Gemara says in some other places, Shchochum v'chozru v'yistum. During the time from the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah until then, they had forgotten them, and then they reestablished them. And now Shimon HaPkuli had to reestablish the order. Now, how do you forget Shemoneh Esrei? Don't you daven it three times a day? So one possibility, in fact, is the Mishnah in Brachas tells us not necessarily. You have the Mishnah describes over there that many of the Chachamim say you don't necessarily have to daven full Shemoneh Esrei every day. Many days, you can just daven, many times, you can just daven Habineinu, which is you do the first and last three Brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, and then you do one short Bracha in the middle that encapsulates all the 13, all the 12 or 13 middle Brachas. So not necessarily may everybody have been davening Shemoneh Esrei on a regular basis, and therefore Shimon HaPkuli had to reestablish it. A few other possibilities are, Shimon HaPkuli was after the Churban. They needed to rewrite some of the brachas to fit how things are after the Churban. For example, the bracha of the Yerushalayim had to be rewritten. The bracha Ritzeh had to be written. So that would be part of what Shimon HaPkuli did as well. And then there's various other possibilities about what exactly he was accomplishing with reestablishing the order, what exactly had been forgotten, and what exactly you need to reestablish. Ben Yehoyada says they didn't forget the order of the brachas at all. They forgot these various proofs from the psukim that the brachas davka have to be in this order, and Shimon HaPkuli reestablished the psukim that we learned from them the order of the various brachas. The Gemara says, "Mikan ve'elach also the sapa b'shvacha shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu." Beyond that, you're not allowed to make a bracha to say about the praise of Hashem. So, in other words, you want to say your own tefillas in praise of Hashem gezunt dehed, but don't make brachas in Shemoneh Esrei of them. De'amar abalaz, or my dichtiv mi yimalo gurus Hashem yashmiya kol tehillah. So, what does it mean? A pasuk in Tehillim, who can speak the power of Hashem? Who can speak the power of Hashem can make heard all of his praise. So in the simple meaning, it would mean that the me goes on both halves of the pasuk. Who could speak the strength of Hashem, and who could make heard all his praise? But the redarshining, l'mi nor l'malo gurus Hashem, for whom is it appropriate to speak of the power of Hashem, is only l'mi sheyocha lashmiya kol tehillasei, only someone who can make heard all of Hashem's praise. And of course, nobody can do that. Nobody could possibly say all of Hashem's praise. So therefore, you stick to what the Chachamim set up for you. And in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Baba Chana Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Hamasapa B'Shvacha Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoyse Midai. If a person speaks too much of the praise of Hashem, in other words, he goes against what we just said, and he starts making up his own brachas to praise Hashem, Nekam in Olam, he gets uprooted from the world. Because again, like as if like he's trying to show, like I'm able to come closer to saying all of Hashem's praise, and of course that's infinite, so you're not going to get any closer anyway, so therefore by acting that way, he gets himself uprooted from the world. Shenema, as a pasuk says in Iyov, Hayisupa Loki Adaber. Could it be told to him? When I would speak? Im Oma Ish Ki Yevula. How could a person say it? Wouldn't he get swallowed up? So in other words, we doubtin. Rashi explained that could we possibly say all of Hashem's praise? That I should keep on Ki Adaber. That I should continue speaking and saying more and more of it. Im Omar Ish, if a person were to say that he could do that, ki yivula, then he would be swallowed up. So we see that there's a limit to how much you're supposed to. You say Shemana Esrei as the Chachamim established. Now you have, for example, it does say in the Gemara mentions, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, in the middle of each bracha of Shemana Esrei, except for the first and last three, in the middle of each of the 13 brachas, you can add your own petitions to Hashem that have to do with the theme of that bracha. So even the bracha atachonin, for example, when you have a particular need to ask Hashem for more intelligence, then you can ask it in your own words in the middle of that bracha before chaneinu mitcha chacham min avadas. The same way you need extra help doing tshuva, you put it in hashibenu, and so on and so forth. And then if you have anything that doesn't fit in any of the other brachas, then you can ask it in shmakeleinu. All that's fine, but not to make up your own brachas with your own praises of Hashem. That we're saying in the Gemara here would be very inappropriate, because then you're talking as though like you would be able to reach closer to pray to giving Hashem all his praise, and you can't do that. In this connection, the Gemara says, Dorash Rabbi Yehuda Ish Kfar Giburaya, Rabbi Yehuda from Kfar Giburaya Darshan, Va'amilak Ish Kfar Gibur Chayil. Others say he wasn't from Kfar Giburaya, he was from Kfar Gibur Chayil. He said, My Dichtiv, what does it mean? Another Pasuk in Tehillim, L'chod Dumiya Sehila, to you, Hashem, silence is praise. What does that mean? Sama Dekula Mashtoika. The best ingredient that you can have is silence. In other words, again, the greatest praise you can give Hashem is to be silent and say, in other words, I can't even say anymore because of how great you are. This is, by the way, it talks about in the Zohar and in Chassidus. This is the idea why Shemana Esrei is said quietly. Because we have this the total bittul to Hashem, so as if like we're saying we can't even speak at all. To the extent that we can even speak, it's going to be in a whisper. He also Rav Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said Amri b'marava. They say in Eretz Yisrael an expression in this connection: Mila b'sela mashtoika b'trein. If a word is worth one sela, then Rashi says if you want to buy speech for a seller, then first buy silence for two, meaning in other words, silence is twice as worthy as speaking. So again, there's the idea: you speak what's necessary, but don't go beyond that. Realize that silence before Hashem is even greater than speech. There is a vote on this from the Ruzhiner, from the Halakha Ruzhiner, that says that when do we say Mila B'Sela? Only if Mashtoka B'Trein, only if you really have a lot more that you could have said of Divrei Chochma and Divrei Shevach and whatever, and you hold yourself back, then your words are worth a Sela. If it's just that you're not saying anything because you don't have anything to say, then your Mila is not necessarily worth a Sela. Okay. Getting back now to topics involving the Megillah. We said in the Mishnah, Kra Pelo Yotze, we said if you read the Megillah by heart, you're not Yotze. So Menolon, where do we know that from? Amar Rava Asya Zechira Zechira, because we make a Gzeira Shava on the word Zechira that it says in connection with the Megillah and that it says in connection with remembering Amalek. Ksiv Hacha Vayom Ma'el Nizkarim, here in the Megillah it says that these days are remembered. In connection with the war with Amalek at the end of Parashas B'Shalach, Hashem tells Moshe, write this memory in a sefer. So mala halan b'sefer, just like there, we're talking about that it has to be in a sefer Torah, afkan b'sefer, the same way over here, it has to be from a written text, not baal peh. The Gemara says, okay, but who says that zechira over here means reading it from the scroll? Dilma iyun ba'alma. Maybe it just means thinking into it. So the Torah is telling you to think about a Amalek and about the war about with him, and to think about the events of the Megillah and delve into them and understand them. But where do we see anything about reading them from a book? The answer is lo sakadaitach. You can't think that way. Dichtiv, Tanya, when the pasuk says zocher, when the pasuk says zocher es asher asalacha Amalek, yachol b'lev, you would think that it's enough to think it in your heart. No, when the pasuk finishes off over there by Amalek, don't forget it. So that covers that you're not allowed, that covers that you're never allowed to forget it from your heart. So what do we mean when it says zocher? It means you have to say it verbally. So it's not just enough to think about it. If it was just that, it wouldn't have had to say zocher as well as loisishka. You actually have to say it with your mouth. And again, since it said basefer, then that teaches us you have to read it from a written scroll. So this is one of the sources for the idea that parashas zocher is daraisa, that you actually have to read it on, that you have to actually read it from a scroll. And then from a Sefer Torah. And then we're saying by Gzeira Shava means that the Megillah has to be read from a scroll as well and not by heart. Okay. We said Kra Targum Lo Yotzachula. We said that if you read the Megillah in Targum Loshen, in Aramaic rather than in Loshen Kodesh, then you're not Yotze. So the Gemara says, Hei Chidami, what's the scenario? Ilema Deksiva Mikra, the Kori Lo Targum. Are we talking about that a person has in front of him a Megillah written in Lashon Kodesh, and he's reading the Targum, and in other words, as he's going along, he's looking at the Hebrew words and mentally translating them into Aramaic and reading out loud the words in Aramaic? Well, of course you're not Yotzeh Hayinu Al Peh. That's the same thing as reading by heart, because there's no actual Aramaic text in front of him. And the answer is Lo Tzricha Dichtiva Targum V'Kori Lo Targum. Right, but the Chiddush in the Mishnah is, even if he has a Megillah in front of him that's written in Aramaic, and he's reading the Aramaic, nevertheless, that's no good. Now, the Mishnah continued, Abel Koden Oysa, the lawyers is Balaz, but we said that people who don't understand Lashon Kodesh, you can read it for them in their language. And here I mentioned, and when we learned the Mishnah, we mentioned that you have a Machalukas Rishonim, would that work for a person who knows Lashon Kodesh as well as that other language? So let's say, for example, if you were reading the Megillah in English, for example, would it be that only a person subject to the conditions that we're going to say now in the Gemara? So would we say that only a person who understands only English and not Lashon Kodesh is Yotze with that? Or would it be even a person who also understands Lashon Kodesh could be Yotze with a reading in English? So we said that you could do that. So the question is, didn't you just finish saying that if you, in the Mishnah, that if you read it in any other language, you're not Yotze? So the answer is, Rav Shmuel Dami Tavayu, V'laz Yevonim. The answer is that Rav and Shmuel both say that when the Mishnah says you're allowed to read it in a foreign language, means specifically in the Greek language. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Hei Chidami. Again, are we talking about where it's written in front of you in Lashon Kodesh, and as you're looking at it, you're mentally translating into Greek and reading Greek? Of course, that's not going to work. That means doing it by heart. And the answer is, right, we're talking about that it's actually written in Greek, and you're reading it in Greek. So there's no problem of reading Al-Peh, and we're saying that therefore that's allowed. Now, there you have a machlokes rishonim, whether does it mean that it can actually be written in Greek letters and the Greek language, or does it mean that it would be written in the Greek language, but using a Hebrew script? So you'd be writing out, transliterating into Hebrew, the Greek words. So that you have also a machlokes about that. So before we continue with that discussion, the Gemara interjects with something else. We said Rab Acha said in the name of Rab Elazar. So now the Gemara interjects a second with something else that Rab Acha said in the name of Rab Elazar. And then we're going to get back to this discussion about what languages you're allowed to read the Megillah in. So the Gemara says, V'omer Rab Acha, Omer Rab Elazar, Minayin Shekro Yakadosh Baruch Hu LeYaakov Kael. How do we know that Hashem called Yaakov Kael? Now, what does that mean? Hashem is calling him Kael, which is the name of Hashem. We'll get back to that in a second. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Vayikra lo Kael lo Kael Yisrael. The pasuk describes how in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov built a mizbeach, and he called it, and the pasuk says, and he Vayikra lo, and he called him Kael lo Kael Yisrael. Now, the Isak daitach lo mizbeach, Kori lo Yaakov Kael. doesn't mean the simple sense that it means that Yaakov named the Mizbeach Kael, that Yaakov named the Mizbeach Kael, then it should say Vayikra lo Yaakov Nibayilai. Then it should say Vayakov Sham Mizbeach, he built their Mizbeach, Vayikra lo Yaakov, and Yaakov called it Kael lo Kei Yisrael. Elo Vayikra lo Yaakov Kael. Rather, we have to understand the words of the pasuk. Vayikra lo means he, Hashem, called him Yaakov Kael, and who did that? Elo Kei Yisrael. Who did that? The God of Israel. Now, what does that mean? So, first of all, Tosfos points out, now there are other places, Rashi on the Pasuk also mentioned, there are other places in Tanakh where you have somebody builds a Mizbeach and names it by a name of Hashem. So Rashi in each of those places explains, doesn't mean he's obviously not saying the Mizbeach is a god. He's saying that every time, so for example, Moshe built the Mizbeach after the war with Amalek and called it Hashem Nisim. So the point is not the Mizbeach is Hashem, but every time a person sees that Mizbeach and mentions the name of it, they're going to remember the nest that Hashem did for us. So Tosfos says, okay, you can have, in each of those cases, there was a nest or there was something special that happened over there. Here, you don't have, it doesn't say that anything special happened in this place where Yaakov built this Mizbeach. Right before that, you have that Yaakov comes to Shechem and buys a plot of land. So nothing special that happened over there. So therefore that brings the Gemara to Darshan that it means that, so if it meant that Yaakov named the Mizbeach Kael, meaning in other words, that every time a person sees the Mizbeach, they should remember that Hashem runs the world, well then it should have said clearly, Vayikra lo Yaakov. The fact that it doesn't do that is what allows the Gemara to Darshan this, that it means that Hashem called him Kael. Now, what does that mean? Kael, after all, is the name of Hashem. So one possibility is it means that the word Kael fundamentally means strong. So it means Hashem is saying that Yaakov is the strong one in the world. We had just defeated the Malach of Esav after all. But there are actually, there's a medrash in that connection where Hashem says to Yaakov, so to speak, like I'm the Kael up on high and you're the Kael down here on earth. And just like Hashem can create worlds, so the Tzaddikim can create worlds. So there's the idea, in other words, that there's the idea just like you have Malachim, for example, are bottled to Elikos. And sometimes even when a Malach is coming in a Shlichus of Hashem, he's referred to by the name of Hashem. The same way you have over here that Yaakov, that the Pasuk is expressing the idea that Yaakov is that Yaakov has such a total bittul to Elikus that therefore he can be called by the name of Hashem. And there are various places in Chassidus, there are Maimorim of the Tzemach Tzedek and the Rebbe Maharash that talk about this and then that develop the idea that Kael specifically has to do with Chochma, and it represents the idea that Yaakov has the ability to reveal Hashem's Chochma in the world, etc. But the bottom line is, in other words, that we're saying that not, of course, that Yaakov is a god, chas v'shalom, but we're saying that Yaakov has to reflect more than anybody else in the world, reflect Elikus in the world. They bring in this connection, also a medrash, that says that Yaakov's image is engraved, so to speak, on Hashem's kiseh covered, representing that Yaakov is like the closest thing to Elikus that you can have in this physical world is Yaakov of him. So now getting back to the question of reading the Megillah in other languages. So again, we just said that the Mishnah had said on the one hand, you can't read it in other, on the one hand, the Mishnah had said that if you read it in Targum, you're not Yotzeh, but then it said that you could read it for Loyazos, for people who don't know, for people who know other languages, you can read it for them in their language. And we had Rav and Shmuel saying that refers specifically to Greek. But the Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Kora Giftis, if a person reads the Megillah in Giptis, the word Giptis is actually related to the word Egypt. It means the Coptic language, which is a descendant of the ancient language of Mitzrayim, which nowadays that language is almost extinct. You have only a few people in Mitzrayim speak it, but in those times it was a common spoken language in Egypt. So suppose you have Jews who live in Egypt. They don't know Lashon Kodesh. Their native language is Giptis. So if you're reading them for the Megillah in Giptis for them, or if you're reading it in Ivris, now Ivris usually means Lashon Kodesh, but here Rashi says it means Lashon Eiver HaNahar, means the language of people who live on the other side of the river Pras, so some form of Aramaic or some language related to that. Or if a person reads the Megillah Elamis in the language of Elam, which is the area in the world where Shushan is, Modis, or in the language of Modai, or Yavonis, or in Greek, Lo Yotze. So then he's not Yotze. So what are Rav and Shmuel saying that you're allowed to read it in Greek? The answer is, Holodamya Elalaha. The answer is the scenario that Rav and Shmuel are talking about, that you can be yotze with Greek, is more similar to what the Braisa continues. The same Braisa continues. Giptis legiptim, that if, before we were talking about, let's say you're reading the Megillah in Giptis, and the people who are listening don't know the Giptis language at all. So then they're not yotze, because there's no presumenissa. But the Braisa continues, Giptis legiptim, if you have an audience of Jews who only know, who know Giptis, and you read the Megillah for them in the Giptis language, or Ivris le'Ivrim, where you have Jews who know the Ivri language, this language of Avraham Nahor, and you read the Megillah for them in Ivris, Elamis le'Elamim, or in the Elami language to Jews from Elam, Yevonis le'Yevonim, or in Greek for Jews, for Jews who know Greek, Yotza. So then you're Yotza. So in other words, that's the scenario over here. We're talking about where your audience actually understands the language that the Megillah, that you're reading the Megillah in. So the question is, Yehochi, well, if so, Rav or Shmuel, Amai Mukmi Lamasnissin, the Laz Yevonis, then in that case, what forces Rav and Shmuel to say that we're talking about Greek? And in other words, the implication is that according to Rav and Shmuel, if you read in Giptis or any of these other languages, you would not be Yotzer. Only in Greek, it sounds like, are you Yotzer, according to Rav and Shmuel. Why don't they say in accordance with the Braisa that the Mishnah is saying the same thing? Loikma b'chol laz, let them say that any kind of laz is kosher. No, you're right. Ela masnisin ke Braisa. The answer is no. The Mishnah, when it says b'chol loshen, is talking about the similar to the Braisa. So when the Mishnah says that you can't be Yotze b'chol loshen, means, for example, you're reading in Giptis and the people who are listening don't understand the Giptis language. So then you're not Yotze. When the Mishnah says, Avo koyin oisul lawyers is falaz, we mean that you're talking about you have Jews who do understand Giptis and you read the Megillah for them in Giptis, then they're Yotze. So rather, what Rav and Shmuel are saying when they're limiting this to Greek is talking about a different context. So, namely, Rav Shmuel da Amitavayu Laz Yevoni la kol kosher. Namely, that Rav and Shmuel hold that Laz Yevonis would be kosher for everybody. Meaning that, in other words, we know, as the Gemara is going to tell us now. If people who hear the Megillah read in Lashon Kodesh, it doesn't matter whether they understand Lashon Kodesh or not, either way they're Yotze. Rav and Shmuel are saying the same rule applies to Greek. If you hear a Megillah reading in Greek, even though you don't know the Greek language, you're still Yotze, just as if you heard it in Lashon Kodesh and you'd be Yotze. But if you're doing it in any other language, in Giptis or any of these other languages, then you'd only be Yotze only if you actually know Giptis. So the question is, Valkatani Yevonis Yevonim Ein Lekula Amaloi. What do you mean, though? The Braisa says that you can only read in Greek for Jews who speak Greek, implying that if you read in Greek for Jews who speak other languages, then you're not Yotze. The answer is, Inu D'Amar K'Rav Shimon Gamliel. The answer is, Rav and Shmuel in that are following the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Itnan, we learned in a Mishnah in the first Perek, Rav Shimon Gamliel Am Af Sforim Lohitiru Shei Kosu Eli Yevonis. That we said over there, that the Chachamim had said over there, that Sfarim of Tanakh can be written in any language. And Rav Shimon Gamliel said, no, only in Lashon Kodesh or in Greek. So Rav and Shmuel are following that opinion, and therefore they're saying that Yevonis is kosher for anybody, because we see that Sifrei Torah can even be written in it. Or not Sifrei Torah, but other books of Tanakh, rather, can be written even in it. So the question is, so why do they have to go in such a roundabout way? Let them just say straight out the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And the answer is, fine, but if they said that, then we would misunderstand what they're saying. They would think, you would think that applies only to other Sfarim of Tanakh, that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying they can be written in Yevonis, and Rav and Shmuel agree with that. But the Megillah, where it says on it, Kichsavam, according to its writing. So Emalo, you would think that maybe not. Maybe you don't have a heter to write a Megillah in Greek and read it in Greek. Kamash Malan. So therefore, Rav and Shmuel want us to know that no, in fact, the halacha that even by a Megillah, such a thing works. Now, so what does it come out so far? So it sounds like we're saying that Yevonis, Rav and Shmuel, we're saying you can read to anybody. Other languages, you can only read to people who speak those languages. Now, a problem with that is before that on Daf Tes, when we discussed Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chacham's opinion, we said that actually the Gemara had said over there that Megillah, precisely because it says Kichsavim v'chaloshonam, therefore it has to be written in Lashon Kodesh and it can't be written in Greek. So Tosfos discusses over there that that Rav and Shmuel have a different understanding of the Gemara than it did on a different understanding of Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion than it said on Daf Tes. They learn that our Gemara is saying that Rav and Shmuel hold that Rav Shimon Gamliel would say you could write a Megillah in Greek, but the Gemara on Daf Tes held differently and understood Rav Shimon Gamliel differently. To say that he would agree that a Megillah cannot be written in Greek, he would say that it has to be written in Lashon Kodesh. You also have the Baal Amor asks on this. The Ran brings this. The Ran does not bring this halacha of Yevonis for everybody. He just brings the halacha of Giptis LeGiptim, etc. And the Baal Amor says why? Based on what we just said in the Gemara, it should be that the halacha ought to be that you can read Yevoni for everybody, not just for people who speak Greek. So the Ramban discusses it over there in Milchomos and explains a little bit similarly to Tosfos that Rav and Shmuel have a different understanding of the Gemara than it did on Daf Tes. And Rabbi Yochanan also who says the halacha over there, who says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he's also disagreeing on what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel actually holds. The Ran talks about it at some length. And the ins and outs of what the halacha is in that regard. One thing the Rambam says is practically speaking, the Rif didn't bring the halacha of Yevonis being kosher for everybody because that would only apply to the ancient Yevoni language, the ancient Greek language, which nobody speaks that anymore. Eventually, that got corrupted, and therefore nowadays Yevonis is no different than any other language. So lemaisa, the halacha is you can in principle read the Megillah in other languages. However, it would have to be written in that language. It would still have to be written in with ink on parchment in that language, and then you have a machlokas. We're showing him whether it would have to be written in Hebrew characters or whether it's fine if it's written in Greek or English or whatever characters. With also the provision that the Gemara is going to point out later on, that the Gemara is going to point out in a minute. Now there are certain words in the Megillah that we ourselves are not certain of the translation of them. So therefore, if you're doing that, if you were going to prepare a translation of the Megillah and read it like that, you would have to figure out what you're going to do with those words. You'd have to read those words in Lashon Kodesh, maybe. So in practice, because of all these provisions, you don't really find this concept of reading the Megillah in foreign languages. Practically speaking, you just read it in Lashon Kodesh, and everybody is yotze whether they understand Lashon Kodesh or not. The Mishnah had said about lawyers shama ashuris yotze b'chol. We said that if a lawyer is somebody who knows a foreign language hears the Megillah in ashuris in Lashon Kodesh, then he's yotze. So the question is why b'chol yodem aikamri? How does it help? He doesn't know what they're saying. How is the person doing this? The answer is midi dehavi an noshim ve'ami aretz. The answer is fine, but he's no different than women and ami aretz in Hebrew speaking places. They don't understand everything that's saying the Megillah either, and they're still yotze. So the same way, even if a person doesn't know Lashon Kodesh at all, they can still be yotze. And the Gemara says maskif for Ravina. Ravina challenges the initial assumption that you have to actually understand everything in the Megillah in order to be yotze. You're assuming that, you're answering, okay, but you see that the Noshim and Amei Aretz don't. But Ravina is saying, why do you even have a question in the first place? After all, when we read the Megillah, do we know what the words ha'achashtronim b'nei ha'ramachim mean? Not necessarily, which, okay, some of the Meforshim say it doesn't mean that nobody knows it. It means the Chachamim know it. And in fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains that particularly Hashtronim B'nai Aramachim means very, very fast camels, that they sent Mordechai's messages to the whole empire on very, very fast two-humped camels. But still, so we know it, but maybe the average person doesn't know what that is. Ella, so why are we here? It's a mitzvah's kriyo for some initiative, because the fact is you have a mitzvah to lay in the Megillah. And with that, you're accomplishing Pursum Inissa. Even if you don't understand anything, so fine, you ask You don't understand something, you ask the other people who are listening, and they explain to you, and they explain to you what the nest was all about. Hochanami, the same thing over here. Mitzvah Kriya, Pursum and Nissa, you can be reading the Megillah in Lashon Kodesh, and a person listening may not understand Lashon Kodesh, but there's enough of a Pursum and Nissa because now he's in a position to ask somebody else who heard the Megillah read in Lashon Kodesh what exactly is going on over here, what was the nest, and the other person will tell him, and therefore you have Pursum and Nissa. So therefore it works to read the Megillah in Lashon Kodesh even when the audience doesn't understand it. Next, the Mishnah had said, "Kras Sirugin Yotze V'chula," that if you read the Megillah Sirugin, then you Yotze. So what is Sirugin? The Gemara tells, "Loi habu yadi rabbanan, my Sirugin." The Chachamim, in the time of Rebbe, did not know what the word Sirugin meant. We had this Gemara in Rosh Hashanah as well. Shamuel Amsa Debei Rebbe, one time they heard the maid servant in Rebbe's house, the Ka'amru Lehula Rabbanan, she said to the Chachamim, where they were coming in a few at a time, Dab Eili Piski Piski Debei Rebbe, they were coming in a few at a time to Rebbe's house, and she asked them, An Mose Atta Nechnasim Sirugin Sirugin, how long are you going to be coming in Sirugin Sirugin, a little here, a little there. So now they understood, that's what it means. When we say cross Sirugin, that's what it means, that you read the Megillah a little here and a little there. In other words, you read a few psukim and then paused and then continued reading the Megillah. Another one, Loi habu yadi rabbanan mai chaluglugos. The Chachamim also did not, now, since we're mentioning that, we mentioned a few other words that the Chachamim didn't know the meanings of those words. So the Loi habu yadi rabbanan mai chaluglugos, the Chachamim didn't know what chaluglugos are, which is a plant that's mentioned. It's a vegetable that's mentioned in various places in Mishnayos and Braises. In particular, Tosfos mentions in Rosh Hashanah that it says that we don't allow the Kohen Gadol to eat them on the days before Yom Kippur, because we don't want them to become a Baal Keri on Yom Kippur. And this is a plant that has the property of heating a person up and making it more likely they'll become a Baal Keri. So the Chum didn't know what that plant was. Shamuel Amsa de Bay Rebbe, but one time they heard the maid servant in Rebbe's house, she saw a man who was scattering parfachini, which is a vegetable that they could be familiar with. Rashi gives a French translation for it. In English, the plant is called purslane. It's distantly related to spinach and beets and whatever. So she says to the guy, how long are you going to be scattering your chaluglugos? So now they know what chaluglugos are. They could recognize the plant. So now they know what that word means. Another one, Loi habu yadi rabbanan mai salsaleho usrei memecha. Nachum did not know what it means, a pasuk in Mishlei that says salsaleha, and it will raise you up. It's talking about the Torah. So what does the word salsaleha mean in connection with the Torah? But Shamu'la Amsa de Bei Rebbe, they heard this maidservant of Rebbe's house, Dehavas Amrlahu Gabra Davah Mahapach Mamazie, she saw a person who was playing around with and teasing and curling his hair, and she says to him, how long are you going to be masalsal your hair? So now we understand salsaleha means searching and turning over and investigating like this guy is doing with his hair. So therefore, it means keep on turning over like in Pirkei Avos, hafochba, keep on turning over the Torah and keep on delving into it and searching it out, and it will raise you up. Another one, Loi habu yadi rabbanan mai hashlech al Hashem Yehovcha. The Chum didn't understand what it means. The pasuk in Tehillim, throw on Hashem Yehovcha. And the pasuk continues, "V'hu yichalkalacha," and Hashem will sustain you. What is Yehovcha? Omer Rav Baba Chana, Zimna Chode Hava Azilna Bahadi Ahu Taya. One time, I was traveling with this Arab merchant, the Kaderina Tuna. I was carrying a load, but Omer Li, and the Arab says to me, "Shkil Yehovich v'shadi agamloyt." Take your Yehov and throw it on my camel. So now we understand that the word Yehov means a burden. So kashlech al Hashem Yehovcha, throw your burden on Hashem, v'hu yichalkalacha, and he will sustain you. There's an explanation that's brought from the Vilna Gaon and from the Divrei Chaim and various others that says that it's not just that the Chum didn't know the meaning of the word Yehovcha. It means they were wondering, how far does B'tochen and Hashem go? Do you actually have to make your own effort, and then Hashem will bless your efforts? Or can there even be a level where you don't have to make any effort at all, and Hashem does everything for you? And then they saw the answer in the story of Rabbi Baba Chana, where by rights, you would think if Rabbi Baba Chana wants his load to be carried, he should have to pay the Arab for the privilege of putting it on his donkey. And instead, the Arab offers him to put it on there for free. So therefore, they derived from that's what David HaMelech means. And this pasuk can tell him that even you can completely rely on Hashem, there can be a time when you don't even have to make your effort at all. Hashem will do everything for you. Another one, Lo Yhavu Yadi Rabbanan, Mai B'Tete Tia B'Matate Hashmed. The Chachamim of Rebbe's times didn't know what it means, a Pasuk in Yeshaya, where Hashem is saying about Babel that he's going to completely destroy it. So what does that mean? I'll Tete Tia with the Matate of destruction. But Shamu'ul Am said to Bei Rebbe, they heard the maidservant of Rebbe's house, the Havas Amr Lachavata, where she was saying to another maid over there, Shkuli Tatis of a Tati Besa, take a broom and sweep the house. So now they understood the Tete Tia, but Matate Hashmed means Hashem is saying, I will sweep Babel with the broom of destruction. So in other words, it'll be just like you sweep a place with a broom and it's completely clean, the same way Babel, the city of Babel, is going to be completely cleaned out of all the treasures and all the beautiful buildings and all the everything that were there. The whole thing is just going to be ruins. There was an interesting explanation I saw in connection with a couple of these that I saw from Reb Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, from Reb J.V. Soloveitchik from Boston, where he says as far as the Sirugin, it's not just the Chacham didn't know the meaning of the word, they didn't understand. So what's the big deal if you're reading the Megillah Sirugin that the Mishnah has to tell us that you're Yotze? Then she heard them telling him, why are you coming in Sirugin, Sirugin? In other words, not honorable to the Torah to be walking into the Beis Medrash a few at a time. So then they understood by the same token, really it's not so respectful to the Megillah to read it Sirugin, to read it with breaks like that. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us you're still Yotze. And as far as the broom one, they didn't understand. How could Hashem be so happy that the Rishoyim are utterly destroyed that Hashem is saying, I'm going to sweep it with the broom of destruction? And then they understood from what she's saying to her friend, take the broom and sweep the house. And the purpose of sweeping is to clean out the house. And the same way, the purpose that Hashem is doing that is to clean out the Rishoyim and make way for the tzaddikim in the world. So it's not just to punish the Rishoyim, but for a constructive, positive purpose. Continues the Gemara, getting back to the matter of Sirugin. Cross Sirugin Yotza. If you read the Megillah Sirugin, again with breaks in between, then you Yotza. Sirusin lo Yotza. But if you read it Sirusin, meaning out of order, then you're not Yotza, as we said in the Mishnah, that if you read it the Mafreya, you're not Yotza. Rab Moina Oyma Meshum Rab Yehuda after Sirugin. Rab Moina says in the name of Rab Yehuda, no, even when it comes to Sirugin, you're not always Yotza. Im shark the ligmaras kula, if you pause long enough in the middle of the Megillah to finish the whole Megillah, choyzel rosh, then you have to start over again. So Amar Rabbi Yosef halacha could have mona shomer mashum Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yosef says halacha is like that. Amalei Abaya Rabbi Yosef, in which case Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, well then what do you mean when it's long enough to finish the Megillah? Do you mean kide ligmaras kula mehecha de koyla sefer? Do you mean you count from wherever he's up to at that point in the Megillah? If there's enough time for him to read from there till the end of the Megillah, then he has to start over, and you're saying the halacha is like that. Or do we mean the time that would take him at his pace to read the Megillah from beginning to end? Does it mean from beginning to end? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, definitely it has to be from beginning to end. Otherwise, you're making it very variable. Every person is going to be holding at a different place in the Megillah when he pauses, and you're going to say there would be a different shiur. So it has to mean, in other words, the time that it would take him at his pace to read the whole Megillah from beginning to end. And Ramona is saying that if he paused that long, then he has to start over again. Now, is that the halacha? So the Gemara says, Omer of Abba, Omer of Yumi of Abba, Omer Rav, halacha could Ramona, that he says in the name of Rav, also the halacha is like Ramona. Or Shmuel Omer ain't halacha could Ramona. However, Shmuel says the halacha is not like Ramona. So it doesn't matter how long you pause, you still don't need to start over. The Gemara says, Besura Mas Nuhachi. In Surah, that was how they learned the Sugya. But Pupadissa, Mas Nuhachi. In Pupadissa, they learned it as follows. Amr of Kahana, Amr of Allah Kirabmana. Or Shmuel Amr Ein Allah Kirabmana. So the same thing, but Rav Kahana is saying it rather than Rav Amr in the name of Rav Yumi Ababa. Rabbi Masni Ibcha, on the other hand, Rabbi learned it the other way around. Rav Amar Ein Halacha K'Rabmona, or Shmuel Amar Halacha K'Rabmona. That Rav says Halacha is not like Rabmona, and Shmuel says it is. So who do we follow? Amar Rabbi Yosef, in the coat did a Bibi B'Yoncha. You can hold what Rabbi says in your hand, in other words, accept his version of it, that Rav is the one who's saying that Halacha is not like Rabmona, and it doesn't matter how much you pause in it. And Shmuel is the one that says that not. And that would mean the halacha is like Rav, because the halacha is usually like Rav and Shmuel. The halacha is usually like Rav over Shmuel in Dine Issa V'Heter. The Shmuel or the Chayesh Lichida, because we see that Shmuel is the one who's concerned about the opinion of an individual Tana. So Shmuel would be the one who holds that the halacha is like Ramona, but the Rav wouldn't care about that. He would say the halacha is like Rav. The Tanan, where do we see that Shmuel holds such a thing? We learn in a Mishnah in Yevamos. Shemeres Yavam Shekidish Achiv Esachoisa. Suppose that you have a Shemeres Yavam, a woman who's waiting for Yavam. Now the eldest brother really is supposed to be the one who does Chalitza or Yavam. So suppose that one of his brothers is the Kaddish or sister. So what do we do? So now the problem is that the problem is that if he marries her, then he's marrying Achos Zekukosai, the sister of a woman who has a Zika to him, who has a connection to him for Yavam. So therefore, so Mishum Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Amru. So they said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, what you should do is Omrim Loi. We tell him Hamten Achiyasa Achicha Agado Maisa. We say wait. We tell him don't marry her yet. Wait until your older brother does Chalitza or Yibum, and then you'll be able to marry her. So in other words, so as opposed to the Chachamim say, there's no problem with that because she doesn't have any particular Zika to him more than the other brother, and therefore it's mutter for him to marry her. And Omer Shmuel halacha could have Yehudim and Beseira, and Shmuel says that that's the halacha. So we see that Shmuel is choshesh for a das yachid. So therefore, in this case, also Shmuel must be the one who's choshesh for the Mona's opinion. But the halacha is not like that. The halacha is like Rab, that we don't have to worry. Therefore, even if you pause in the middle of the Megillah, you don't have to start over again. And that's the halacha. Everyone.